Magic Book Club with Bensons for Beds.
Hello, you. Welcome. It is the Magic Book Club podcast. My name's Tom Price, and this is the show where I'm going to find out exactly what makes your favourite authors put their pen to paper, their fingers to keyboard, or maybe start speaking to their scribe. That would be a good way to write a book, wouldn't it? Just have someone at the desk, and you can just sit on a chair. Just shouting ideas at them. None of our authors do that. We've got the real deal here on the show, especially today. Today, we're going to be talking with contributing editor for GQ, a founder of the LGBTQ plus community, The Queer Bible, a member of the Mayor of London's Commission for Diversity in the Public Realm, and, most importantly of all those things, all-round tip-top chap. He's called Jack Guinness. Favourite tipple of mine as well. He's a great guy. So sit back, make yourself something iced, maybe make yourself a little bit of Jack Guinness, or get the dog on the leads. Get ready for your very slow run in the sun. Make sure you've got this podcast on as we find out just what makes this week's author tick. Here we go. I've got the fabulous Jack Guinness. Hello, Jack. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
What a wonderful adjective. I love being called fabulous. Thank you. Fabulous. I'm feeling fabulous.
Good. Are you enjoying this heat, which we suddenly seem to have?
I am. I feel as though, brilliantly, at the end of lockdown, we've got the sunshine. It's Pride Month as well. So sunshine, happy LGBTQ plus people. It's all my favourite things. I'm feeling very, very happy.
Yes, good. When did become Pride Month? Because that's an excellent thing.
Because, yes, LGBTQ plus people, we're a little bit greedy. It's like with the Queen having two birthdays. We could have just had a Pride Day, and then we were like, do you know what? We're just going to take the whole blooming month. But this year, we're being even more greedy because we've had to move the actual official Pride celebrations, you know, when you have all the floats going down Oxford Street. Because of restrictions, we've had to move that. I say we, like we all met up in a, you know, like a big pink tent somewhere. But
is there a committee?
There is. There's the gay mafia decided that it should be moved to, I'm just imagining like Elton John and Sir Ian McKellen sat around with Miriam Margolis deciding the fate of the queer community. So they've moved the actual celebrations to September, but You can't really change Pride Month because all these, you know, big corporations have got their rainbow flags ready to just pop in the windows to pretend they care about LGBTQ plus stuff.
I was going to say about that. How do you feel about that? Because it does stick in the craw, doesn't it, for some people, when the big corporations jump on it. It feels almost a bit cynical, Jack, maybe?
Potentially. I mean, I think, to be honest, it's a privilege to live in a culture where we can sit around complaining about there being too much LGBTQ plus acceptance. Like, around the world, there are so many places where it's illegal to be gay, where they're really repressive, or LGBTQ plus, and they're really repressive laws and stuff. So on the one hand, I'm very grateful that we live in a culture where you can walk down the street and there'll be flags, you know, in like banks and stuff like that. But then when you see organizations that have a terrible track record of LGBTQ plus inclusivity, or you see political parties that have a history of passing really terrible laws that have really damaged our culture as a whole, when you see them coming out being like, yeah, Pride, I'm like, You know that thing about dogs aren't just for Christmas?
I think, yeah, right.
LGBTQ plus people aren't just for Pride. You need to kind of show up all year round. You can't just turn up one day and expect us to be like, yeah, thanks for waving a flag.
This is so unbelievable. As you're saying this beautiful articulate speech, an email's just popped up on my computer from a well-known car micro-hiring site. Zipcar. And literally, I've just seen the email. Oh my God, the timing was just perfect. It just says, have pride in your ride. Really, Zipcar? Really?
Well, I noticed also on Uber, when I took a journey, that, you know, there's like a progress line, like a kind of snake that shows you where you're going. They've turned it into a rainbow snake, which I thought, really, like, okay, yes. Are you queering my journey somehow? I don't really get that. Also, I'm very offended that you're checking your emails while I was delivering that really beautiful speech.
Sorry.
Anything else, you know? Just, you know, fill out your LinkedIn, pop a post on Facebook while I'm giving a really impassioned speech about queer rights around the world.
Oh, don't. Bitcoin's just crashed. One second.
I'll stop it. Get off your Coinbase now.
So now, listen, before we get distracted by Bitcoin, because I feel like we could do a whole different podcast about that.
Jack, I could.
Let's talk about The Queer Bible. Tell us what this wonderful, wonderful book is.
So it really started out as a website. So a few years ago, I was watching the Oscars and Sam Smith had just won an Oscar for Best Song and said that they were the first LGBTQ plus person to win this Oscar. And it turned out that they weren't. And people, you know what people are like on Twitter? People piled in and were just being really horrific, saying, you know, young people don't know their queer history. And it was really like, there was a real vicious twist to it. Yeah. And we live in this kind of pile-on culture where everyone loves to criticize other people. And so I went online and I was challenged. I was like, but do I know my LGBTQ plus history? Do I know about these queer trailblazers that went before me? And I know a little bit. I studied English literature. I know the kind of the big names. So I went online and I tried to find a resource. And there are some great resources, but they all look like they were made in kind of Microsoft Word clip art from the 90s, you know, with that like clip thing. And they're in purple Comic Sans font. And
they're made by New Roman.
100%. And they're made by like well-meaning like professors. But I was thinking, wait a sec, aren't LGBTQ plus people supposed to be like, as you said before in your lovely introduction, the most fabulous, creative, amazing people in the world? So I thought we need a space that reflects that. I like it when the form mirrors the content, you know? So I set about to create the Queer Bible website, which still exists now, queerbible.com. And the project is basically, I ask my heroes to write an essay about their hero. So you get a lovely double narrative. You get a kind of a contemporary person that offers you a way in to someone else's life, someone else's story. And they're always really personal. They're always about someone that changed that person's life. So, for example, I managed to track down this guy called David Crowland, who used to go out with the photographer Robert Mapplethorpe. And he wrote this essay about, I think he got wasted. He went to the Chelsea Hotel and he met a young girl called Patti Smith and her then boyfriend, Robert Mapplethorpe. And he promptly steals Robert Mapplethorpe off the legend Patti Smith.
That's why she's so mad.
Listen, I got to the bottom of it. She's furious because she got her boyfriend stolen off her.
Oh, she could have been a completely different artist were it not for that moment. The sliding door.
I love, yeah, if she hadn't had that traumatizing moment, we wouldn't have had her music or career or poetry. So if you don't know who any of those people are, that's quite a juicy story. So, you know, for a young kid reading that, you're like, oh, that sounds pretty rock and roll. And then they go off and then, you know, they'll listen to Patti Smith's music. They'll read Just Kids. They'll look at Robert Mapplethorpe's art. And it's, for me, these stories, these narratives, the humor of them, the heartbreak in them is like the sugar that helps the medicine go down. And the medicine is the history. The medicine is the knowledge about, you know, those people that went before us. So that's how it started. It started as a website and my dream was always to turn it into a book. And now I'm very lucky we've done that. And it's coming out in June.
Indeed, indeed. What a wonderful, wonderful story. What a brilliant sort of way of there's something about looking, about, you know, you've got the history of these people here who are doing these things. And there's something in finding in history, which up to this point, as you were saying, has been underreported or reported in poor, in a poor font. But finding your heroes and finding expression for them and finding that connection with people is only going to make you feel better, right? It's only going to be, you know, helpful.
I think it's a universal experience. It doesn't matter what your gender is, what your sexuality is. Like, as a teenager, you want to go off and find your tribe. You know, you normally quite angry with your family for whatever reason, serious or funny. And you want to go off there and make your own identity. And the added problem for a lot of LGBTQ plus people is that you realize you're different from all the people you're supposed to feel close to. You instantly feel separated from your family. You can feel separated from a lot of your peers. And for lots of people, that can take them down a road of shame, of self-loathing, of kind of experimentation and falling into different, addictions and issues where they're searching for themselves and they're searching for their tribes. Yeah. And I think the most powerful thing you can do for any marginalized group is connect them up to their history to say to young people, not only should you be proud of who you are, if you're LGBTQ plus, and accept who you are and love who you are, but you should also be proud because you're walking in the footsteps of some of the most incredible, brilliant, fascinating people going back thousands of years through our history. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, people have had to hide their own stories to protect themselves from attack and abuse. And then also people have had their histories erased. So someone like Alan Turing, you know, in a lot of the historical accounts of his life, they leave out his homosexuality. In the movie, it was quite straight washed. So the whole project's about going back and finding out about these people that did exist and led incredible, brilliant, inspiring lives. And that in turn allows us to feel connected to them and have self-worth and feel proud of where we're from, as everyone should. So it's really about connecting back up to that proud history.
And there's nothing more damaging than looking out into the ether to find connection with someone and being greeted by silence because it's been repressed. And now here we are with books like this, and that's only going to be a source of healing, I suppose.
Absolutely. I try and stay away from being too like Oprah-ish about it. Oprah's great, don't get me wrong.
Never stay away from that.
But it is, thank you, good. I'm glad to hear that. But there is something very healing about that. You know, it's very powerful to see yourself reflected back.
Or were you healed?
Were you healed or were you healing? Yeah, I was both. I was healed and I'm trying to heal other people. And there's something really powerful about seeing people that are like you represented. And there's something really damaging about not seeing anyone like you in the mainstream or on TV or in music. So representation really, really, really matters.
It does really matter.
And so I'm really excited to share the book with young people and then for them to get to read all these stories. And it's also illustrated. I was a massive fan of comics. I'm a real nerd. And when I was a kid, I loved reading graphic novels and comics. And I still do.
Okay.
And, yeah,
about the illustrations. They're brilliant. I love the illustrations. They're gorgeous.
Thank you. So the website, the reason why the illustrations happened was on the website, I was really worried about using photographs and getting sued for copyright. So it was kind of just a happy accident. And I thought, oh, I know, I'll do illustrations. So I started commissioning illustrators. And the internet's incredible. I've worked with a young gay guy. He's like, how old is he? Like 17, 18 in Mexico City that I found on Instagram. And I've built up these relationships with all these queer kids all around the world that are incredible illustrators. And now in the book, each essay is illustrated by an illustrator. So for example, Elton John's written an amazing essay on Divine. So there's an illustration of Divine, and then we also have an illustration of Elton John. So the whole book has this really textured, beautiful feel. Like it has to exist as a book. It couldn't just be a website. There's a kind of a preciousness to it. And the illustrations really add to that texture.
And how was that when Elton John was sending in his essay? Was it a bit like you were Elton John's teacher?
No, completely the other way around. I mean, we're talking about the healing process of this book in lockdown, because I don't have a normal job. I work in the fashion industry, so a lot of my work completely stopped, and this book really saved my life because it really gave me something to focus on during lockdown. And it also meant that a lot of the contributors that really wanted to be part of the project but were too busy normally were now able to contribute. So someone like Elton John, if it wasn't for lockdown, he's always been very supportive and you know, wanted to be part of this, but there was just a small window of time when he was able to write this essay and send it in. So there are a few people like him who you can't quite believe that you're talking to. I had a phone call with him and I spoke to one of his, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying this, I spoke to one of his assistants and they said, you need to call Elton on a landline. And I was like, that's quite weird. Why do I need to call Elton on a landline? So I just sheepishly wrote back. I was like, I don't have a landline. Like, nobody has a landline anymore. Like, why? No, totally. Is it some kind of thing that he's got about landlines? And they wrote back and said, no, it's just, do you want your mobile phone to drop connection while you're on the phone to Elton John? And I was like, oh, that's why.
Oh, wow. Because that's the worst imaginable thing.
I loved it. I loved it. It was for me. It was for my protection to say, no, if you have a moment to talk to Elton John, make sure you're on a landline. Yeah,
forget GCHQ, it's EJHQ. You've got a proper form for that. Did you call him from a phone box or something?
No, do you know what? I had visions of myself, yeah, like telling people to be quiet outside a phone box. But I called on a mobile, but I had it plugged into the wall, charging, just in case anything went wrong. And that was probably one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had. And he was so sweet and lovely. And you have all these expectations of people, you know, he's Elton John. I'm expecting this really kind of like brash, big character. And he's just like the sweetest, kindest, lovely man. So speaking of healing experiences, I mean, talking to one of my heroes, even for half an hour, was a pretty amazing experience for me.
Yes, yes. Heroes everywhere in this book. Heroes being written about, heroes doing the writing. We've got fantastic people. Obviously, Elton John, Graham Norton, Tan France, Russell Tovey. I love Russell Tovey. Love him.
He's brilliant. And his whole project that he's doing with Talk Art, he's got a book out at the moment I love how he's democratizing and making accessible art for everyone. And that's a similar mission that I've got with the Queer Bible Project, that, yeah, you know, I want to demystify and open up history and culture and make it really fun and engaging. Graham Norton's essay is absolutely brilliant. He's, you know, he's annoying. He's one of those people that's good at everything. So I was hoping...
It's tough for us. I was like, man. But don't hate us. Don't hate us, Jack.
Just you and Graham.
Mm-hmm. He's incredible. He's such a good writer.
I had no idea. I didn't realise how brilliant he was. He's so funny, and his essay made me laugh and cry. And I don't want to spoil it, but it opens with him talking about how being gay is something you can't do alone. You need someone else to be gay with. So if he'd come out in his village, he would have just been gay riding his bicycle alone around in his village. He would have been gay sitting alone watching television. And it's such a funny, original, weird, surreal concept. And it's so funny. And he writes about Armistead Maupin, who wrote Tales of the City. Mm. And he talks about this. I just want people to read it. I don't want to spoil it because he does a much better job of describing it than I ever could. But he talks about this whole different bit of his life that I had no idea existed, and he talks about this completely other time, and he really is brilliant at painting another world. And it's really quite, I find it quite hard to imagine different eras, and he paints it so beautifully, and there's such a lightness in his writing, and by the end a real profundity, if that's a word.
It is now
we're trademarking that. There's a profundity.
It is a word. Yeah, it's a profundity. It's profundity everywhere. But this is what I love about him, because he proves that stupid, kind of, well, not stupid, but, you know, presenters who can come across as being, with levity and everything sort of thrown
levity
away.
Levity is a great word.
Thanks very much. Use it twice a day. It's like my verbal moisturizer. But he proves that these people who come across as light end entertainers have fantastic talent, and his ability to write and take you there so efficiently. You know what? Yes. There's an efficiency to his writing. 10 words and you're in a completely different place.
There is. And those words are so... I don't know whether it's just completely instinctive because he's so clever and funny, or they're just so carefully placed. Also, thinking back to, you know, his day job on television, you know those people at dinner parties that are just like the funniest, most brilliant people that kind of keep it all going? Yeah. It's like a swan watching him work, where it just looks like he's gliding along, but his feet underneath the water are like, you know, he's 5 steps ahead of everyone working out what they're going to say. And that intelligence and that humour is infused into his yeah, essay.
I mean, listen, we can't be nice about all of the people who've written essays in this.
Do you want me to slag some of them off?
Well, I was going to say, who wrote the RuPaul one? This RuPaul one's awful.
Yeah, the RuPaul one's terrible. It's badly written. It's cliched. That's my one, actually. That's my one.
It's ever so good. In fact, can I read the first
Go for it. First
few lines? Let me get this straight. You publicly came out, did a ton of interviews, launched a queer website, and spent all your money commissioning pieces just so you could meet RuPaul. What kind of maniac, stalker, weirdo would do something like that? I replied to my boyfriend's wild accusation. So you wrote this, Jack. Tell us about your obsession with RuPaul.
It's been a lifelong obsession. I remember being very young and watching Elton John and RuPaul perform. What was the Kiki D song? Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Yeah.
And they re-released it together. And I was very, very young. And I remember watching it on TV and not... I knew that RuPaul wasn't a woman, but I also didn't know what a drag queen was. And it was like RuPaul had kind of transcended gender and become something more, like this kind of incredible creature. And immediately I was drawn to this amazing, like, goddess, this 6'10" black goddess. And she just seemed so glamorous and everything that my life wasn't. And like Elton John, they're dressing up as different characters from history. So like Cleopatra and Whistler's mother and all these funny lovers. But it's queered because it's, you know, it's Elton John and this incredible drag queen. And I followed RuPaul's career throughout my life. And then obviously Drag Race blew onto the global scene.
Do you feel
and
a bit like, I knew him before he was famous?
100%. 100%. I was like, I was five.
I was there first. I was totally there first.
I remember them wearing Breton tops.
Who was the first one? Is it RuPaul? Who was the first person who you saw on TV or in the public eye and you thought, there's a connection, I feel a connection, they're like me?
Well, I think it's really interesting. James Baldwin writes about this, that people know without knowing. that you maybe sense something different about that person and you can't really put your finger on it. And it's not necessarily about sex or sexual. It's about being an outsider. And I think outsiders know each other and you can't quite put a finger on what it is, you know, but you know that you're both different. David Furnish, writing his essay about Sylvester, talks about how his group of friends that he was friends with at school all grew up to be gay, except one of them, who was Eric McCormack, who played Will in Will and Grace, which is the gayest thing in the world. So even the straight one was gayer than the gay people. And that's funny. And I had a friend at school and we both grew up and realized that we were gay. And it's funny that you kind of find each other. So on TV, people like Julian Clary, he was someone that, you know, like grannies would maybe watch him and just think that he was just like a funny man, not maybe not realize he was gay. And that some of the innuendos and jokes would kind of go over my head, but I knew that he was really naughty. I always love it when, you know, grannies often love gay guys without realizing they're gay. Well, like, they just Kenneth think they're
Williams.
Kind.
Kenneth Williams. What's the bit in that in the essay about him? It says it's theatrical. It's not. He's not gay. It's theatrical.
He's theatrical. He's theatrical. Yeah.
I'm so using that as a euphemism. He's very theatrical.
He's theatrical. And like Liberace. Grannies loved Liberace, didn't they? They're just, yes. He's so careful about his clothes. He just likes sequins. He's just particular about his diamond shoes. And he's a screaming queen, Grandma.
There's so many bits in this book and so many quirks, so fascinating. And I'll be honest, I am a boring, middle-aged, white, straight guy, but reading this has opened my mind to all these people I didn't know much about. I sort of knew, I recognised the names of a lot of people, but there's so many great characters and icons who I knew nothing about. So it is so interesting, endlessly fascinating. And I've really enjoyed reading this, Jack. Thank you very much for putting it together. It's absolutely brilliant. The Queer Bible is out now. Now, normally, Jack, before we wrap things up, I'll usually ask our authors, you know, what's next and all that sort of stuff, but you are very busy. So not only are you at GQ, you're running Queer Bible, of course, you're also a member of the Mayor of London's Commission for Diversity in the Public Realm, which is a very, very fancy long title, but it's a very, very important job. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, so I don't really know how much I'm allowed to say about it. It's really an incredibly inspiring, brilliant group of people that are getting together to discuss how we can make sure that the public spaces in London reflect the population of London and our history. So it's a really exciting, positive, celebratory project. And I'm really, really happy to be part of it. I'm a Londoner born and raised. I love art. I love art in public spaces. And I'm really excited to see how we can engage with local communities to make sure that people's stories, just like in the Queer Bible, are being shared and celebrated in the public space. So it's really, really exciting. And it's a really positive project. I'm very honoured to be part of it.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And have you got your eye on maybe penning a novel yourself? Is that something you're thinking about for the future?
Yeah, I've thought about it. I have thought about it. I'm very, I'm cautious about it. I'm a massive literature fan. And I think I'd have to like go and lock myself away on a mountainside somewhere to write. London is too distracting.
Good luck running the expenses past your publisher for that one.
Yeah. Yes, I'm buying a house on the side of a hill.
Thanks, HarperCollins. Thanks.
I didn't know we could get expenses.
What? Who are your main inspirations as a writer? Who do you like to read the most?
Oh, gosh, I have so many. I'm a massive Dave Eggers fan. A heartbreaking work of staggering genius. I read that when I was really young and it changed what I thought literature could look like. Yes. I love poetic writing. So there's a novel by a poet called Anne Michaels called Fugitive Pieces. Yes. That's brilliant. It's all about the power of language to kind of mend broken hearts and broken souls, which I think is what literature does at its best. I'm a massive James Baldwin fan, and we've got a brilliant essay on James Baldwin by Paul Mendes, who has himself written a brilliant novel last year. Rainbow Milk's incredible.
Fantastic.
And then also another book that I love, House of Impossible Beauties, written by Joseph Cassara. Joseph Cassara is in this book as well, and he's written an essay on Pedro Almodovar, the Spanish film director, and his essay, I read it and I was like, something's weird about this essay. I can't put my finger on it. And I realized that he's mirrored the rhythm and imagery of a Pedro Almodovar film in his essay. So that's, yeah, it's mind blowing. It really is. And it's so delicately done. And you're like, oh my gosh, he's copying the form. It's brilliant. So yeah, I'm a huge fiction fan, and I love reading nonfiction as well. And I'm very excited to read Russell Tovey's Talk Art book and look at the pictures. I like a few pictures as well.
It's all about looking at the pictures. I do love to judge a book by its cover as well. That's what I do. Jack, thank you so much for joining us on the Magic Book Club podcast. You are.
It's been my pleasure.
The Queer Bible is out now. And there you go. That's it for today's Magic Book Club podcast. Join me next time for more brilliant stories from fabulous authors. And don't forget, as ever, head over to magic.co.uk and you can see all the books we have been picking for June. And let me tell you, there are meetings and everything. When we pick these books, it's not just randomly done. We don't just listen to publishers and put whatever they tell us onto our list. We make sure we go through it and we choose the best books for you. So head over to magic.co.uk and you can see all our June picks and join the book club for yourself. In the meantime, happy reading.